talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning. Welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Lynn Venhouse.
And today is April 17th. We missed last week, so we've got a lot of movies to catch up
and
on.
And you missed us, didn't you? Yes, I'll bet.
Sure did. First thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about the top 12 at the box office. I don't even have these written down. I guess we'll have to call Michelle.
Oh, my.
And we've got Michelle McHugh on the phone. Although, you know what?
Hi, everyone.
Michelle's
no longer Michelle McHugh because Michelle got married.
Yes.
What?
A couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
So, like a lot of married women, she's going to change her name. So, we have Susan McHugh on the phone. I'm just kidding. What's your name now, Michelle?
Adele Dazeem.
Michelle Hannick.
Very good. Well,
H-A-N-N-E-T-T.
Oh, well, congratulations on your recent nuptials.
Thank you so much.
Michelle found the only eligible bachelor in the state of Texas who likes M. Night Shyamalan movies.
Oh, my goodness.
Exactly.
You throw a net over him and grab scoop him right out there.
That's right. Well, I hope he likes movies, Michelle.
He does.
Good.
He does.
All those vulgar entertainments.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're happy for you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
All right. So Michelle Hannick will be talking about the top 12 at the box office. She used to do this all the time until she got one of those pesky J jobs. But today is a holiday, isn't it?
Yeah.
What holiday is it?
For some, it's, you know, that day after Easter. Some people get the day off. It's just one of those kind of vague.
Well, my kids had to go to school, fortunately.
I see.
All right.
Well, that's why I was like, wait a minute. I have Monday off, and that just, you know, coincides with the day of the podcast.
All right. Well, good. Well, we're glad you're here. What about the top 12 of the box office? What happened?
I know your trend has been to kind of lead up to the number one, but I'm gonna do the old fashioned Michelle way and go, you know, 1-12.
Okay. It wasn't much of a mystery.
So, here's the top 12 domestic weekend box office estimates at number one. Yay! The Fate of the Furious from Universal Pictures. The movie took in for the holiday weekend $100.2 million estimated.
Wow.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Well, that's about what they predicted, right?
They were projecting over the $100 million. Universal's The Fate of the Furious, the eighth film in the popular franchise, revved up and hit the gas with a monumental biggest ever global opening weekend of $532.5 million, including a massive debut in China, where the film hosted the biggest 3-day opening weekend of all time.
Wow!
They can't afford those cars, but I can watch
them.
Well, good for those guys. What was number two?
And number two was 20th Century Fox's The Boss Baby. That brought in another $15.5 million, bringing its new domestic total to $116 million. So, the movie's doing really well at $287 million worldwide.
That's amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Coming in at number three was Disney's Beauty and the Beast. That movie brought in $13.6 million. Fans around the world pushed Disney's live-action adaptation past the $1 billion mark at the global box office, making it 2017's highest-grossing film worldwide to date and the highest-grossing live-action musical of all time and a global phenomenon. So, yeah, that movie's no signs of slowing down yet.
Okay.
At number four, however, Sony Smurfs, The Lost Village. That movie was number four with $6.5 million. Number five was Going in Style from Warner Brothers Pictures. That brought in $6.3
million.
Right now, it stands at $23 million here in the States. So, I mean, it has found an audience. I mean, you know, you talk to most people who have seen it, you know, they liked it. They wanted that kind of film to go see.
I didn't like it so much.
So,
that's okay.
Yeah. I saw that. Fox Searchlight, the Gifted movie came in at number 6 with 3 million. At Universal, surprise hit, Get Out was number 7 with 2.9 million.
Wow.
What a film. That movie, Date Now.
Get Out.
Yeah,
still in the top 10. Amazing. Wow.
It's a great movie. It's really a wonderful genre pick.
Isn't it? It's so unexpected and such a twist to it. And
And it keeps you guessing the whole time, and it's so well done.
Isn't it? And it's just everyone, no one has spoiled, you know, the twist or the surprise, which is even, you know, even better.
Right.
So, you know, another hit from Universal. So where do we stand now? At number 8, geez. Lionsgate Power Rangers, 2.9 million. Yikes.
Mm.
Brutal.
Not a franchise.
And number 9 is The Case for the Christ. That was from PureFlix, 2.7 million. That was playing kind of throughout the whole U.S., you know, the whole Easter crowd, So that did a respectable 2.7 million. Number 10 is Kong Skull Island with 2.7 million. That movie now has a worldwide gross of 552 million. So that's, still going well. We'll maybe see another Kong movie,
I hope so.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, it was really good. It's a lot of fun. And number 11, not doing so well. Paramount really did a huge marketing campaign for this, Ghost in the Shell. Scarlett Johansson starring. It didn't find its audience. They were hoping it would, but it unfortunately it didn't. So far, the movie's only brought in $37 million, kind of a disappointment for them, unfortunately. And number 12 is from Focus Features, The Zookeeper's Wife. That brought in $2.1 million, and that stars Jessica Chastain.
I reviewed that.
Is Logan not in the top 12? Did I miss that, maybe?
No,
it's dropped out. It was there for a long time.
Yeah, but I've got Get Out still in the top 12. I would have thought Logan would still be there, but Get Out came out before Logan. So
yeah, but Get Out's just it's a buzz picture, and Logan and probably the audience has already seen it.
Yes, it was top heavy. All right, well, good. Thanks for calling in and doing the top 12. Have you seen any good movies out there in Texas?
They have movies there?
I did see The Fate of the Furious was just, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The movie that we have that you just posted, Split, it's still opening in various territories throughout the world.
Good.
So, giving away the DVD. But I just have to side note, what's today, the 17th?
Yes.
December coming up, they showed Disney revealed the first trailer for the next Star Wars movie, and boy, is it something. We have that posted up on the website, but
I haven't seen it.
Just the music and.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's great. It gives you goosebumps.
Yeah. Right. Now, Michelle, how about that new Thor trailer, boy? Oh, I tell you.
Yes! Yes! Is that going to be a lot of fun or what?
Oh,
wait,
buddy.
They show.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say? Well, we got you.
That's it.
All right.
This was a lot of fun as usual.
All right. Well, congrats again on your recent marriage.
Thank you.
Mrs. Hannick. We'll just call you Mrs. Hannick from now on.
Mrs. H.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
All right, everybody, take care.
All right.
Thank you, Michelle.
Bye, Michelle.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Okay, that was, of course, Michelle Hannick, formerly Michelle McHugh. All right, well, that's the top 10, and let's move on to some reviews. We got 5 movies to review. I've only seen 2, but you guys have seen the rest, which is good. Let's start with Going in Style. Going in Style opened a week and a half ago.
I want to ride that back.
Let's go get our money back.
Yeah. You get exactly what's on the pension, right?
That's all I want.
What if we get more?
We give it to charity.
It's time for a practice run.
We'll be right back.
I don't want to stay in the car. It's hot in here.
And I reviewed it at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. We'll just give it a brief review since I think everybody who's going to see it probably has already seen it. I gave it 2.5 stars at WeirdMovieGeeks.com, which isn't a great review, although it's not a movie I would discourage people from going to see. Like my parents, for example, I think they would go and see it and just have a fine time with it. It's sort of a crowd pleaser. I just didn't like the fact that it was just so cuddly and cozy and everybody was so nice and it had it was just that kind of movie. I wish it had been a little darker, a little more daring.
I wish it had been more like its 79 original.
Yeah you
know, that's a tough movie.
It is.
Well, I liked it because I was with an audience of senior citizens when I saw it, and they just loved it. And I think, like you said, you could take your parents. I think it's one of the few movies that, you know, you can take your grandparents to, you can take your parents to. It's just the three actors are such pros.
Yeah,
that's what Oscar saves winners. It. Yeah, that's what saves it.
And they've proven that they all have comedy chops, etc.
Sure, it's hokey, but you know.
Some of the directing is lazy in it, you know. If they want
oh, definitely.
If Zach Braff wants a cheap laugh, he'll just cut to Christopher Lloyd bugging his eyes out.
Yeah.
And it gets a little tiresome.
Sure. It is hokey, but yeah, you've got that scene where they're watching The Bachelorette, which I found
hilarious. Yeah, that was in the trailer. We even talked about that a couple weeks ago. We said, the trailer for this looks pretty funny. And I think Kate said, well, maybe the best stuff is in the trailer. And unfortunately, for the most part, she was right.
Ann Margaret's still kicking it.
Yeah.
And then Jim and I were talking about how they showed up at the bank robbery for the big climactic bank robbery wearing these masks. I'm like, who the heck are these masks supposed to be? And then the guy goes, give me some money. And she goes, yes, Mr. Sinatra. And I'm like, these are supposed to be the Rat Pack. Those masks look nothing like Frank and Dino and Sammy.
What do you mean?
Well, Sammy kind of looked like him, but the other two guys were interchangeable.
Maybe after they were identified as the Rat Pack, then maybe I saw little Sammy in that other one.
But the other two, I say, yeah. I have to find out which one is Sinatra and which one is
And that's important in a bank robbery comedy is the masks.
Yeah. And in the original, they just had the Groucho glasses with the nose and the mustache, you know.
Yeah, but in Point Break, they have
the president.
Yeah, which reminds me, have you seen that trailer for Baby Driver?
I have.
Oh, and there's this great gag where he's showing up wearing an Austin Powers mask. He goes, I told you to get a Michael Myers mask. This is a Mike Myers mask. He goes, no, from Halloween. This is a Halloween mask. No, the killer from Halloween. He says, you mean Jason? That's a great gag. Worthy of Abbott and Costello.
That is a good one. But speaking of classic comics, if you get a chance, watch the 79 original. It's completely different in tone. And George Burns should have got the Oscar for that film rather than Sunshine Boy. He's fantastic.
All right. Well, I haven't seen that in 40 years, but maybe I'll try to track it down.
Oh, yes. Worth it.
All right. So is there anything else anybody wants to say about Going in Style? Go read my review. It's pretty bland and inoffensive, but then again, a whole lot of people are gonna like it.
It's kind of a distant cousin to Hell or High Water because it's revenge against the evil bankers.
Yeah.
It's the man; they're gonna stick it to the man.
Well, it's the bankers.
I felt a little curmudgeonly giving it only 2.5 stars, but I.
No, you're pretty generous.
All right. Well, let's move on. Gifted.
My soul. I think your niece may be gifted.
I am good friends with the headmaster of the Oaks Academy for Gifted Education.
No, I promised my sister I'd give Mary a normal life. I think she's got to be here. I've sat upon
the set. Jim, you saw Gifted. Did you see Gifted?
Yes.
All right.
Talk about schmaltzy.
Octavia Spencer. What? Who reviewed it?
That was me.
And how many stars did you give it?
I think I gave it 3.5 because I thought it wasn't as manipulative as I feared it would be. We're going to see lots of hugs and lots of lessons learned. But no, we do have those. But it's funnier than I expected. It's the relationship between Chris Evans is a swinging bachelor down in Florida, and he has custody of his sister's daughter. And she's getting to be about 8 years old, and he says, you know, the homeschooling is done. You need to have social interaction with other kids your age. I'm sending you to public school, and she goes there to first grade. And the first grade teacher is played by Jenny Slate, and a very, very great comedian. And the little girl is bored. And there's a whole rigmarole. There's a big fight that happens on a bus. Chris Evans gets called into the principal's office. He says, well, I can get her sent to a gifted school. And he says, I don't want that. And this finally attracts the attention of his estranged mother, who was played by Lindsay Duncan. And she's a very British, very tight-lipped. And she says, well, I need to take this girl away. She's carrying on the legacy of her mother, who was a genius and all that. And it's a custody battle ensues. So you've got a little bit, you've got a lot of Kramer versus Kramer with lots of courtroom scenes of trying to get custody of the little girl.
What was the one with Jodie Foster?
Little Man Tate, a lot of that in there. A little bit of Good Will Hunting in there because she's a mathematical genius. There's some good actors in it. Lindsay Duncan's very good. I was wondering where I'd seen her before, and I'd seen her from the TV show Sherlock.
And she's in About Time.
Yeah, she's very good. But it's like since Octavia Spencer, I think we remarked afterwards, this is a role that Whoopi Goldberg might have played 20 years ago or something like that. She's the nurturing sort of earth mother. And it's, maybe I was saying maybe she just wanted to work with Chris Evans again because they were in a much better movie a couple of years ago called Snowpiercer. And there was a whole thing about, Chris Evans was having a little romance with Jenny Slate, but there's not a lot of chemistry between them on screen.
That relationship
goes nowhere. She's sort of regulated to the cheerleader by the end of the film, kind of, being supportive at the end of it. And Evans proves that he can do something beyond Captain America. I think in my review I said once he lays down that shield, but I hope it's not anytime soon.
Well, does it go in any interesting directions? Because it looks very predictable from the trailer.
It is very predictable. It's very manufactured. The only thing that I think saves it is that the audience loved it. It does have some wit and some charm in the script. You've got an adorable little child. You've got a hunky leading man. You have a one-eyed cat named Fred. And then you have sun-dappled ocean scenes and a Cat Stevens song playing. So it's manufactured to tug at your heartstrings, and it does. But I think it's one of those where people are going to love it.
Yeah, I was able to recommend it to my mother yesterday without any problem at all.
That and Going in Style.
Yeah, well, I would recommend this over Going with Style, myself. Yeah. And I will say, Lindsay Duncan's performance is tough. There's a scene where she's getting cross-examined, and she just throws it back at the other attorney, and it's a great sequence. Very strong.
So, Lynn, did you review this?
Yes, I did.
And how many stars did you give it?
I think I gave it 3.
You're on the four-star system, and we're on the five. So Jim and Lynn both liked Gifted.
With reservations.
Yeah. Right.
And I haven't seen it.
Not perfect, but it's serviceable.
All right, let's move on. Another movie we've got to review that Jim and Lynn both saw as well is called Lost City of Z.
I am proposing that Amazonia contain a hidden civilization. If we may find a city where one was considered impossible to exist, it may well write a whole new chapter in human history.
Yes.
What the heck is this movie about, Jim?
Well, it opens Friday, and it's based on a bestseller, isn't it, Lynn? I remember seeing that title on the bestseller charts. Based on a true story, set about 100 years ago. Actually, it starts out in 1906. It tells the story of Sir Percy Fawcett.
Yes.
You can see a fellow's name, and he is a British soldier, and his military career is not going anywhere. I heard you chuckle at this line at the screening at a party. The upper ups are discussing. He says he had a poor choice of ancestors.
Yes.
it's all the class system. He's married to Sienna Miller. They have a child, and he's wanting to go forth, but they sort of assign him to help these map makers. They need to find the exact boundary between Bolivia and Brazil, and it's dangerous work. And he goes down there along with Robert Pattinson from the Twilight films,
who's unrecognizable.
Yeah, it took me a minute to figure out who that was. They go down there and they discover this bits of pottery, and they hear talk of legend of a lost city high up in the mountains. And Percy decides he's going to go there. And once this mission is done, they have a terrible time with disease and piranhas and the natives.
And
piranhas.
Yeah, there's a scene with piranhas.
I love movies with
it.
Piranhas.
Yeah.
Oh, and poison arrow UFOs. Oh, flying.
They have to. They decide they're going to go back to the
Amazon. Is this in 3D?
No.
Should be.
No.
Yes. Any movie with poison arrows and piranhas should be in 3D.
Should be. And he goes back to speak to the what is it, the Discovery Society?
It's the Royal Geographical Society.
Yes. And they're all laughing at him for thinking that there's this, pretty highly evolved tribe hidden away. Except one of them is not laughing, and that's Sir Murray, who's played by August McFadden. And he was part of the South Pole, I guess, discovery there. And he wants to go along with them, but he is woefully out of shape. And it's one of those deals kind of like Captain Bligh from the Mutiny on the Bounty, where they send him away. They send him back. And, of course, he does make it back to England and decides to try to sue them and all that. There's a whole courtroom thing. And then later on, Percy keeps this dream of going back and finding the city. And it finally gets to his oldest son, who was later played by Tom Holland, the new Spider-Man.
Mm.
And they both decide to go down there and find the city. And, things go a little wonky.
Right.
But if you're fans of the Stanley and Livingston story, it kind of reminded me of. And, guys trekking through the brush with their machetes, hacking away at the shrubbery and all that.
It's 2 hours and 20 minutes. Is it too long?
Oh, way too long. Yeah, yes. Too long. My trouble with it is it purports to be an action adventure. And this friend of mine saw the trailer and he thought it was going to be like Indiana Jones.
Oh,
and
I said,
oh, no.
Nope.
Yeah. Some other reviewer, because I can't take credit for this line, said it's Apocalypse Now meets Masterpiece Theater. Mm-hmm. A lot of the action, it's just contained action, but most of it takes place in courtroom or boardroom or home life.
There's a sidetrack to World War I, though, in it that's probably could have been cut down quite a bit.
And it's that, that British Empire stiff upper lip jazz. So to me, the director, James Gray, he has a following.
Yes.
He's done Two Lovers and The Immigrants, and mm-hmm. his movies are beautiful. Yeah. But to me, he's very restrained storyteller. He's very reserved. It's like you're watching it at arm's length. But the lead is this guy named Charlie Hunnam, who turned down 50 Shades of Grey and I guess did this one instead. But he's from Sons of Anarchy, so he has this big female.
He has a
big female following. So if they think he's going to be this swaggering action hero, they are mistaken.
No. He's very, very tight-lipped, very reserved. King Arthur, he's going to be playing.
That's
him
right.
Here,
I saw a trailer for that.
Yeah, but I wish it looks great. The location photography is terrific, but it's kind of a story we've seen before, and it's not told in a really interesting or completely involving way.
Well, that's too bad. Are you reviewing it for WeirdMovieGeeks.com,
Jim? Kate is.
Oh, Kate is. If you were to be reviewing it, how many stars out of five would you give it?
I think I would probably give it three.
Three out of five. Yeah. And how many stars would you give it there, Lynn?
I already wrote my Webster Kirkwood Times review of it, and I gave it a C.
A C. Oh, shucks. So, Jim and Lynn were both disappointed with The Lost City of Z. Let's move on. You guys also both saw Free Fire.
Check out the merch.
That's not what he ordered.
Fuck, really?
We ordered M16s, different weapon.
I'm not running a fucking pizza delivery service.
Keep your shit together.
You want the weapons or you don't want the weapons?
I don't know much about this movie, Free Fire. I know
Ben Wheatley.
Yes, the fellow that gave us High Rise. Did you make it through that?
I watched High Rise. Michael Haffner had that as number one on his list of top 10 of the movies.
And neither Lynn and I could make it through it.
No. I know this guy has a cult following. He loves homages. Like this one is a 70s action movie homage. And so it's set in Boston in 1978. My trouble is this guy really wants to be Quentin Tarantino, but he does this derivative of Reservoir Dogs without any wit or audacity, and it's such high concept because it all takes place in this warehouse, and it's a shootout between two gangs. It's the IRA gang led by Cillian Murphy, and he wants to buy guns, and then it's this other gang, Selenim, led by
Charlito Copley.
Who's exaggerated and the goofy one, and
he can
Army
chew
Hammer.
The scenery, I tell you,
yeah.
yeah. guy.
So yeah, it takes place where?
In all in this warehouse in 1978 in Boston.
Now, what are these Irish and Brits are doing there?
Well, the Irish guys are trying to buy guns to send back over to the old country. And I say there's some Tarantino, a lot of Guy Ritchie in there they want to be. Yes.
There's an Armie Hammer in this?
And Armie Hammer is sort of the facilitator, as is Brie Larson.
Oh, yes.
Oscar winner recently in Kong Skull Island. And she's just kind of the token feeting lady in it, you know? You know, they're all kind of lusting after her, but her character serves little purpose in it. And it's just these guys in bad 70s fashion. With bad hair from the 70s.
Really bad hair.
Facial hair. And it's just them shooting each other for 90 minutes. Is the thing that got me is, of course, some of them get wounded right away. And he says, well, how long I got? It's about 90 minutes. And so the movie is about 90 minutes long. So you're basically waiting for these guys to bleed out. And they're crawling around the floor of this place. And it's just, it might have made an entertaining short, maybe a 20-minute short. But at 90 minutes, it's just interminable.
It's gotten good reviews at the old tomato meter at their 70 reviews. And it's at about 72%.
It's a real young guy, enthusiastic crowd. It premiered at the Toronto Film Festival last fall, so they're just getting around to releasing it now. And I do think the high concept's going to hurt it. But their tagline is all guns, no control. To me,
and a couple of good actors are in it. You know, a couple of them seem very familiar. And the fellow that shoots the first gun is a guy. I think his name. Oh gosh, I'll think of it in a minute. But he was
Riley.
Not Sam Riley.
Jack Rayner.
Jack Rayner from Sing Street.
He was
so
the brother
in Sing Street. And Sam Riley was in Maleficent. And Noah Taylor is the grown-up boy from Shine. And they've done much better films than this. And it made me appreciate the nice guys a lot more from last year, which, you know, I wasn't that fond of anyway. So,
and they have a John Denver song that runs throughout, and I know these filmmakers think they're far more clever than they you know, appear.
Which
to
John
be.
Denver song is it, Lynn?
Annie's Song.
Oh, that is such a pretty song.
But on an 8-track tape player.
Yes, it's very ironic. It's very ironic when they use it. But no, it just, to me, it just is, it fizzles because it's like watching when your kids, your brothers play cops and robbers with the neighborhood guys for 90 minutes.
And Charlito Copley, I mean, you know, he could be very, very good in films, but here he's just given free rein, and his character is just so obnoxious and over the top. It's like, you know, he's like in from another film.
He was like that
comedy.
In Hardcore Henry.
That's what I mean. He was somewhat restrained in the Hollers, I thought. But but here it was just too much.
All right, are you reviewing this for WeireMovieGeeks.com, Jim?
I believe that's Miss Kate again.
Oh, Kate again. How many stars would you give it?
I would give it maybe 2.
Oh, you disliked it even more than you disliked Lost City of Z. Lynn, how many stars are you going to give it?
Probably 2.
2 out of 4.
Yeah.
All right. So Jim and Lynn were very disappointed with Free Fire and do not recommend it.
Yeah.
All right, we're down to our last movie to review, and that is Fate of the Furious.
Dun dun.
This is impossible, which is why you're gonna need a little help. I will beat you like a Cherokee drum.
Number one at the box office, made over $100 million. You guys saw it last Tuesday at the screening. I saw it Saturday night at the IMAX over at the Chesterfield with
the
my 13-year-old.
I like that.
It was great, I thought. It wasn't quite as good as Part 7, I believe.
No. I still think that the void of Paul Thomas Walker is going to
be... I thought the way they addressed that was really lame. I mean, it was just kind of a throwaway line.
Yeah.
It was. They could have done something a lot different.
Well, my favorite...
It was a cop-out.
Right. Well, this to me is, you know, it is what it is. People love it. People love it for what it is, but it has gotten so far away from its original street racing beginnings because now we're dealing with international espionage and terrorism.
Yeah, it's been that way for the past couple of years.
Which cues into my main gripe with it. I've got several gripes with it, but the complete waste of Charlize Theron is this low-level Bond villain.
And she's standing there looking at monitors the whole movie and talking about what she's seeing on the monitor.
Yeah, luckily we're going to have Atomic Blonde here. here in a couple of months, yeah, where she's going to get to capitalize on her great role, yeah, as Furiosa last year.
Right.
And this is such a letdown from that.
I saw the trailer for Atomic Blonde before I saw Furious, Fate of the Furious, and I wish she had played that character in Fate of the Furious.
Yeah,
it would have been a lot more interesting. Yeah, the lack of the strong villain is really its weakest point. And last movie, Part 7, Jason Statham was the villain, and he was a great villain. Now, he's back, but now he's one of the good guys, which is fine. He's actually great as a good guy, and he was great as a bad guy, and it does bring in a little cameo from an Oscar-winning British actress as his mother, and she's great. She only has like one scene. She's probably on the set one day. But she's fantastic. I won't say who it is.
The thing that struck me while watching this, it's a lot of posturing.
Yes.
It's a lot of looking tough and squinting and saying these clipped lines. Yeah. It's either posturing or teasing, and that's the thing that annoys me about this series that's amped up even more in this one, is the teasing between Ludacris's character and Tyrese. Yeah. That, you know, it's like a little boys on a schoolyard. It's really annoying. And, you know, Michael reviewed that from us, and he actually, you know, said this was on the same level as the Marvel Studios films, and I'm sorry, you know, Tony Stark and Steve Rogers are Hamlet compared to Dom and all these characters.
But despite the dialogue, despite the bad villain, the action set pieces are amazing, and it's a hell of a great entertaining movie. I mean, the opening
race in Cuba with
was
the
just
vintage
spectacular,
cars.
And he's going backwards, and his car's on fire. That was great.
Dom seems to have bones made of rubber, though. Yeah. He can throw himself out of these vehicles when they're in motion and not come out with a scrape, you know, not even sore.
Well, this one is about him going rogue, which, you know, is so far-fetched. But my favorite part is The Rock and Jason Statham. I thought they gave the movie much-needed oomph. And apparently, there's this big feud between Vin Diesel and The Rock. And so, since Vin Diesel's a producer, he doesn't have much use for The Rock, so he cuts him down. But, you know, The Rock's the highest-paid actor in America. He just, to me, he's so charismatic. But the fact that they turned Jason Statham from a foe to a frenemy, actually, I thought worked.
Yeah,
you know?
I did too. But some of the other great action set pieces.
New York sequence.
Yeah, I was kind of where they start controlling all these cars, and that scene just goes on and on. It gets bigger and bigger and more cars. And to what end? To get a briefcase out of some guy's hand? and it's not even handcuffed to the guy's wrist. It finally just says, here! You know? And then there must hundreds and hundreds of people had to have died. They don't go on to the collateral damage.
Oh, no.
But holy
cow. And
then, you
know, and then the complete...
But it's still great.
Submarine, you know, crashes through ice and chases them, you know.
And then the scene with Jason Statham and the baby, that was a riot.
Well, that was more interesting than the stuff on the ice, that's for
sure. Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, this is the first entry in the series after Mad Max, which Mad Max sort of changed the face of car chases because they didn't rely on CGI. And this one does, and it's totally different. Mad Max, your adrenaline is pumping because you know it's really stuntmen and stunt drivers. And here, you know, it's just CGI. It's still a lot of fun, but it's just not that exciting.
Oh, it's mindless. And it's, you know, it gives the audience what it wants because clearly it made a gazillion dollars and will continue to do so. And they have greenlit number 9 for 2019. So I just think, where are they going to go with this, you know? I
mean, what's bigger. More cars.
Space.
Yeah.
You know, but like I say, don't compare it to Marvel. But it's just silly, you know, and they're paper thin characters. And it's just a bunch of, you know.
But it knows its audience, and the people who are fans of this movie are going to eat it up and love it and see it again and again and again. It's a success by most any measure.
Sure. People might say, well, why are you cutting down on this? Because, you know, that people like it. But my problem is it eats up all the space at the multiplex, you know. It's going to take over, like a 20 screen. It's going to take over 10 screens. Yeah, and so stuff that, you know, might, you know, deserve to get at least one screen is going to get pushed out. So that's my problem with it.
All right.
Well, there's that need for speed, you know.
So that's it. We're done reviewing movies. What are we seeing this week? The Promise? What is it?
Well, that's seeing that tonight.
Is that Christian Bale?
Yes. That is Christian Bale. With that is Oscar Isaac and a Charlotte LeBond. Okay. And it's another film set in World War I in Turkey. And I just saw one 2 months ago, but it has to be better than The Ottoman Lieutenant.
So all right.
I've got high hopes. It's from Terry George, who directed The Hotel Rwanda and Revolutionary Road. So.
All right. We'll look for our review of The Promise next week. And also Phoenix Forgotten, which is a found footage horror movie, opens Friday. I don't know a whole lot about it.
PG-13, though.
Yeah.
It's going to be creepy.
And what else opens this weekend?
I guess Born
Free Fire.
Free Fire, Lost City of Z.
Yes.
And then the movie, the nature movie, the Disney nature movie, Born in China about the pandas. It's going to be cute.
Oh, yeah. All right.
I've seen the pandas at the San Diego Zoo and at the National Zoo, and you can watch them for a long time. They're just adorable.
You mispronounced it, Lynn. It's China.
Okay. Well, look for reviews of those movies next week. All right, let's go on locally. Always is in St. Louis. Yes. Dark Passage at the Tivoli Wednesday night. It's part of the Tivoli's Classics in the Loop Crime and Noir series. They've been doing really well. They had Maltese Falcon, and then they had Double Indemnity, and they had about 80 people show up at both of those. I was talking to Pete over at the Tivoli. That's good. I mean, you can get 80 people to drive to the Tivoli, park, pay to watch a movie that they could likely watch at home or go rent from the library or something like that. You're doing pretty good. So good for St. Louis for showing up and supporting this film series. Dark Passage I've never seen.
Oh, it's good. It's one of my favorites, but it's one of the least known Bogart movies. And it's just, once you see it, it's, you know, it's your class. Classic, you know, gangster pick, but it's got twists and turns, and of course, it's got the lovely Lauren Bacall.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, oh yes.
But, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Actually, I won't be able to make that. I think I'm going to make the following week. I believe is Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah. Sunset Boulevard.
Never seen that on the big screen.
Oh yeah.
So that'll be good. Dark Passage at the Tivoli Wednesday at 7 o'clock, and Shaun of the Dead is this weekend, Friday and Saturday, at midnight at the Tivoli. That is part of the, what do they call it?
Those guys haven't made a movie in a while, you know? They were on a
they got the new one. Isn't Baby Driver is Edgar Wright?
Yeah, but it doesn't, you know, have
No, it doesn't have Simon Pegg. At least we don't know if it. That's true.
Yes.
So that's midnight. I'll be hosting that, and I'll have Shaun of the Dead trivia and prizes.
Yes.
We did, what did we do over the weekend? We did... heck did we do?
Idiocracy.
That was a lot of fun. We had a pretty good crowd. We had a bigger crowd than we had for the Jackie Chan. That was kind of disappointing. Jim and I saw Wings Friday night. That was fantastic.
That was wonderful, yes.
I can't remember the name of the quartet. Actually, there were six musicians. I think four of them were from France, and then I think they brought in two local musicians as well. Spectacular score for this wonderful 1927 action film.
We've said it before. I'll say it again. If you ever get a chance to see a silent film with live musical accompaniment, jump at it. Go check it out.
One of the best I've seen, and you know, we were just talking about how Fate of the Furious, you know, should have been a more exciting film. The Wings was a hell of an exciting film. I was on the edge of my seat during that film.
Yeah. First Oscar winner.
That's
right. First Oscar winning picture.
First Best Picture, and those.
Actually, it wasn't called Best Picture though.
Best Achievement. In
Best Achievement, and but then they also gave one called Best Artistic Achievement in Film. And that went to Sunrise. So they really, in some ways, they kind of gave away two Best Pictures in 1927. And then the next year, they just combined them both and called it Best Picture.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But
that was great.
Those flying sequences are just, still to this day, are just amazing.
Yep.
You know, I think Idiocracy.
Funny movie.
I think that is way ahead of it was way ahead of its time when it came out, and Mike Judge just nails it.
Yeah, it did not get released here in St. Louis.
Yeah, it didn't play any theaters. Office Space barely played theaters.
Yeah, right? I saw Office Space.
It was one of those DVD word-of-mouth ones, Office Space,
Is a better film. I think Idiocracy has a great idea, and the first half hour is dynamite, but the rest of it, you know, kind of it's footing a little bit. But he's got some good stuff in it.
Yeah, there's other things going on. Of course, my 16mm double feature night is 2 weeks from tomorrow, and I will be showing Mighty Joe Young from 1949.
Oh, wow.
And Machine Gun Kelly from 1958, Roger Corman's crime drama. And that is at 8 o'clock, the Way Out Club, which is at the corner of Jefferson and Graboy. And that is free, though we do set out a jar for the National Children's Cancer Society. A movie that Jim reviewed called Floyd Norman, An Animated Life.
Yes.
Showing this Saturday at Webster University in the afternoon at 2 p.m. It is part of the Kitamata Fest. Well, are you familiar with the Kitamata Fest?
I think, actually, Floyd is going to have a speech, I guess, in the midday, and I think they're going to show the movie at 7:30 that night, I believe.
Really?
And he's going to be there in attendance for the film.
Oh, okay.
And, it's part of this animation festival they have going on at Webster this weekend. And, this is a terrific documentary. This is an interesting guy. And, like I say, if we mentioned about silent movies with musical accompaniment, well, if you can ever get a chance to go speak with a Disney animator or hear them talk, definitely go do that, because he's got great stories. Actually worked with Walt, and he can sort of give a rebuttal of some of the strange ideas about Disney that have been floating around for years.
Still works, though. I mean, he's not totally retired.
Well, that's the thing. What they try to retire him in this documentary is about them trying to retire him at 65, and he's saying, no, I'd still have ideas. I can still contribute. And that's how he does. He's able to sneak around that. It's a wonderful documentary. And if you get a chance to go see him, definitely do that this weekend.
All right. So check the weirdmoviegeeks.com, because I may have put the wrong time. I thought it was at 2 p.m., but Jim thinks it's in the evening. So I will figure that out and correct it in case I got it wrong. Let's see. What else is showing? Fallen Angels is a movie by Karwai Wong. And our friend Pete Timmerman is curated and hosting a retrospective of Karwai Wong films at Webster University. I'm not familiar with Fallen Angels. I think it's about a hitman. So go see that. A week from Saturday, which is the 27th, The Terminator will be at the High Point at midnight, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. When you say Arnold Schwarzenegger on this podcast, you have to say it like that. And I'll be hosting that. Andy is showing that same weekend, Carrie, at Late Night Grindhouse Friday and Saturday. Oh. So go see Carrie Friday and Terminator Saturday.
Now, this is the 76 version. Oh, it's not the one with Chloe Moretz Grace.
No.
Okay. Sure.
It's the pubic hair version, I like to call it.
The De Palma version.
Yeah. I'm sure there's other things going on locally, but that's all I have written down. Who died? Anybody die? Oh,
yes.
Clifton James died. Sheriff Pepper from two 007 movies.
You got a set of wheels. You just won't quit, boy. If there's yours, that is. You spin around, boy. 10 fingers on the fender.
What else was he in, Jim?
Oh, he was in a lot of great stuff. His movie career started in 57 with The Strange One, but he's got a great role in Cool Hand Luke. I think he's one of the prison officials in that.
He was in Cabo Blanco with Charles Bronson.
Yeah, he's in Silver Streak, kind of doing a riff on that Pepper character. Yeah. He's in Superman 2. I think he's one of the law enforcement people trying to bring down the Kryptonian villains. He's in The Untouchables. He's a district attorney that Kevin Costner's reporting to. And he's got a film in production right now called Old Soldiers, so we'll get to see him once more.
All right. So he died, he was 96, I believe.
Yes, and, my goodness, quite a great career over 60 years.
Yeah. And I had no idea he was still alive. So.
Lots of TV.
In some ways, it's good news.
Yeah. Lots of TV, lots of movies, really. Yeah.
Lots of TV and movies. Yep, his name, again, was Clifton James. If you don't recognize the name, you would recognize his face. And of course, like we mentioned, Live and Let Die and The Man Who, with the Golden Gun, he was Sheriff Pepper. It was this kind of crazy comedy character that
precursor to Jackie Gleason's Smokey and the Bandit character.
Everybody loved him so much they brought him back for the next Bond movie.
Yes.
And of course Don Rickles, who is mostly known for stand up and TV and
Chinese, Japanese, Filipino, my ass, you're a Jap. I'll tell you this: 3 years in the jungle looking for your uncle.
What am I bid for this broad before I introduce her?
Look at this. The old guy went, $4.
Was it Sharky show he was on?
Yeah, CPO Sharky.
But he did a heck of a lot of movies.
Oh, my goodness. Well, starting, and we mentioned about Clifton James, 57. Next year, Don Rickles, his screen debut opposite Clark Gable and Burt Lancaster in Run Silent, Run Deep, which is one of the great submarine films of all time. And then he did one of your favorites, X, the Man with the X-ray Eyes. Yeah, kind of a staple at AIP. Did like four of the Beach Blanket or Beach Party movies. I think Muscle Beach Party, Beach Blankenbing, all those films. And then he was in Kelly's Heroes, which is sort of a cult favorite.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people love that one.
1970 Clint Eastwood film. Yeah.
Donald Sutherland.
And we really enjoyed him in another horror film, Innocent Blood, the John Landis sort of mafia vampire flick. That's very entertaining. That's from 93, I think. Yeah. And then in 95, he had a couple of great triumphs. He was in Martin Scorsese's Casino working with De Niro.
The floor boss.
Yeah, terrific role. And then the movie role he might be almost as famous for is, you know, for the Man with X-Ray Eyes. He's Mr. Potato Head in the Toy Story movie. And supposedly they recorded a soundtrack for Toy Story 4, so we'll get to hear him one more time.
Oh, I didn't know that. And there was a lot of, you know, direct-to-video Toy Story sequels that he participated in, that Tom Hanks and some of the others probably didn't.
I was fortunate to see him at the Two Hill about 2007, 8, something like that.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, sharp as a tack, and you know, he could insult with the best of them. But everybody talks about what a big heart he had, and what, you know, his charities and his, you know, love of fellow comedians. But what comedian didn't love him?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot. John Landis did a great documentary about him a couple of years ago also. Oh, yeah. I forgot to write down the title of it. I'll have that next time. But, yeah, that's one you should definitely check out, because it delves into his film career also. Uh-huh. And, he was a terrific all-around entertainer.
All right. Certain. You want to say something else?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you knew that you had to watch him on a talk show. And his Tonight Show, legendary, plus his roast. There's a whole bunch of clips going around of his roast. But the last time he was on Letterman was that final year. Was it like, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
And he was still sharp as a tack.
Sure. All right, how old was he, 92?
90,
okay. Yes. Somebody's 90.
Yeah.
David Letterman. Speaking of Letterman, David Letterman's mother died at age 95.
She did. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Well,
but
you know,
didn't do any movies, though.
You know, Senator John McCain's mother is 103.
Wow.
Yeah, so there you go.
Well, is Eastwood's mother still around?
I think she finally passed away. She was older than dirt. Yeah, she was older than dirt as well.
Yes, my goodness.
Wow.
All right, so R.I.P. to Mr. Don Rickles and Clifton James. R.I.P. to the show, because we're going to have to call it a day here at the Weird Movie Geeks podcast. We'll be back next week, and we can review The Promise and maybe Phoenix Forgotten if one of us sees it. I kind of want to check out Colossal. I'm probably going to go see that this week at the Tivoli. They didn't show it to us. And if I do catch it this week, I'll give it a review next week, whether it's still showing or not. But for now, we're going to have to sign off. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Lynn Venhouse.
Thanks for joining us, Lynn.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
And be sure to listen again next week.
And I love the Italian people. I'll never forget the word of Carmine Gangananzo, who said to me in Brooklyn on a Saturday night, "No, you're Catholic and I'm a Jew, and Sammy, you're black. I'm sorry."
I never tell the truth. I exaggerate. I make fun of blacks, whites, Jews, Jews. You're Chinese, right? Chinese? This girl here? If you're not, get your eyes fixed. Look at a Chinese boy sitting there going, "Who's Chinese? Who's Chinese?"
Phyllis Diller, ladies and gentlemen, who, when she was born, God ran out of clay and made her face trick-or-treat Charlie. Her former husband said on the wedding night, "No!" Bob Newhart made the claim that he was my closest friend. I have never met Bob Newhart. I'll put it to you another way. Bob Newhart goes to many gay parties.
I like you very much, Tully. I like you more than I thought I would like you. Please sit down, because we could be married in an hour.
What's in your heart, right, Sam? Be proud. Brothers, we kiss, we hug. Any black on my lips? Don't write letters, folks. We cover them all.
Nah, I'm not going on.
Come back.
What an evening. Mike, it's so good to see you. I didn't know you were still on.
Yeah.
But this is a good jacket. You come in tomorrow night with cotton candy and you work the carnival. Now, anyway, can I say something since I've seen you?
Certainly. I've gotten so old.
19 years, John.
That's right.
Don't milk it anymore. Walk away.
Get out, Wallace.
You see? See, I try to do one show for a long time rather than six or seven like you for a month or two, and then...
Black leather, black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather, black leather.
Oh, naughty state. Hello, dog.
Black leather, black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather, black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward in the battle, there, chaps.
You happy in your work, Johnny?